This is the Lombardi Line with Michael Lombardi and Patrick Maher on VSiN.
Lombardi Line presented by BetMGM as we welcome you in on this Friday, February 17th. Of course, he's Michael Lombardi. I'm Patrick Maher. We say good morning, good afternoon. This is something I just saw. I have to bring this up with you, my man. M. Lombardi NFL. This is, now, I don't know if you were trying to cause drama, but let's get it going. Quote, Michael Lombardi, if you're honest with yourself, the Bengals could make the case for already being a two-time Super Bowl champ had they managed games differently. So Kansas City just threw the parade, but you're saying, hold on now, Cincinnati could have been there. What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, look, they punt the ball down the middle of the field at the end of the game. I mean, they had Mahomes the last two times they played Mahomes in Kansas City. In the fourth quarter of that game, remember I talked about that injury that I said Mahomes had? And talking to some people, he was affected in the fourth quarter. I'm not blaming anybody, but he was affected, and that's why he had a disastrous fourth quarter. They could have they won that game. They go to the Super Bowl. They don't get the false start. They don't have Mixon in the game on third and one. That game might get to overtime. Couple here and there. So small, right? Then this year, they have Mahomes wounded, completely wounded. And they have an opportunity. They punt the ball down the middle of the field, the longest return until the Super Bowl of 29 yards by Moore, and the penalty, and they lose that game. That game goes to overtime. They're going to get in it. And look, if Mahomes on one leg threw the ball as effectively as they did in that game, Burrow, what would Burrow have done? So my point of the column is look, you know, just because Burrow's going to get a big deal doesn't mean the Bengals are going away. Bengals have a good team. They have a good defensive coordinator. They've kept everybody intact. I think they're a lovely play for next year, assuming they can stay healthy.
Well, taking a look at the futures market right now, there are four teams. The Chiefs at 6-1, the Bills at 7-1, the Niners at 8-1, and the Eagles at 9-1. Four teams ahead of the Bengals in the futures market for next year. The Bengals are sitting at 10-1. After that, the Cowboys 14-1. I think the more interesting question is, what prompted that thought today? What were you thinking about that made you think about the Bengals?
I was thinking about how it was so, you know, going through watching that Super Bowl tape, I was thinking about how Lou Hamoromo doesn't get the job, you know, and then Gannon does. And it kind of propelled me. And then I went back and I watched them. And look, go back and watch that Buffalo tape. They got The Bengals dominated Buffalo in Buffalo. You could say, well, it was the field. No. They were dominated there with a bad offensive line. They got dominated in that game. I mean, the Bengals quietly were playing at a high level, and unfortunately, they made some tactical mistakes like they seem to always make. You know, they go ahead and give away the ball, punt it down the middle of the field. They make mistakes. You know, they have a false start. That wasn't their fault. That gets called. Then a penalty. You know, that game's going to go to overtime, Patrick.
It's interesting. And we're going to show you a graphic here. The early handle so far agrees with you, Michael, because right now the most heavily bet team as far as handle and ticket percentage, the Bengals in the futures market. So you're not the only one. I'm glad you tweeted, because it raised my attention as well.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote that column. I was thinking about that on the flight home from Vegas. I was like, what am I going to write about this week? And I wanted to write about something that propels us into next season. And I really feel like, you know, all these, you know, Josh Allen conversation and all, you know, Burrow's going to get a big contract. Yeah, he'll get a big, Mike Brown will pay him. But there'll be enough cap room, and they have a nucleus of a young team. And then I was thinking about Amoromo's ability to craft the team. So when you work for Mike Brown, the Paul Brown family, the coaches have a lot of say in what they do because they operate as if they're a college team. So the coaches are involved in the draft. Mike Brown makes the final decision. I'm sure Katie Blackburn Brown, her husband, he also is involved, and Duke Tobin's involved. Everybody's involved. But my point here is, that defense is exactly what Lou Amoromo wanted. He built it. That's what he wanted. It wasn't like he got forced to take those guys, and they were very effective.
Yep, and that's the writing spotlight. We'll get to that in just a little bit. The tweet kind of intrigued me to start the show. There's plenty to do. You mentioned Gannon, so let's do that, Elliot. Let's go ahead. We've got some sound from Gannon's introductory conference there yesterday as the new head coach. We've got plenty to come here. Lamar Jackson, Eric Bieniemy, Rex Ryan, Justin Fields. There's a ton of rumors, but let's start here. You know, if you believe what Flores's people said, and there's no reason not to, Flores was offered the Cardinals job. So Gannon gets this job after the Super Bowl. He stays in Phoenix. Bidwell interviews him. Boom, he's there. So Gannon, the second choice at least, and here's what Gannon had to say about taking that job with the Cards.
So look forward to working with the players. That was very appealing to me. Some of the guys that we have on board right now, not too many times do you take over a team and you have a franchise quarterback. So that was very appealing, and I'll head some of this stuff off right now as we talk before we get to questions and things like that. But just know this, we're going to be very adaptable. I'm talking the Arizona Cardinals. This is what our team's going to be. We're going to be adaptable. We're going to be violent. We're going to be explosive, and we're going to be smart. And all three phases go into that. And we will maximize the talents of the players that we have, and that's how we're going to win games. And don't get it twisted, we're going to win games.
That's good. Super, super. Violent is a super cheesy thing to say, but that's what coaches say these days. But what'd you think about Gannon talking about his little mission statement there?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, I don't see the franchise quarterback. I think everything else he said is on point. I mean, I would agree with everything he said. I mean, that's exactly what you want. You want to be that kind of – he described the kind of team he wants to build. Now, my next question would be, do you have a grading system to build that team? Because you're going to need one. They don't have one in Arizona. Just look at their team, the way Keim ran it. There was no grading system there. So let's put that in perspective. So, you know, to me is where my disconnect is, and he's got to say it, he can't not say it, is the fact that, you know, that they I don't see them having a franchise quarterback. I just don't. But maybe he does.
Well, Mr. Bidwell agrees with Gannon. Of course, the owner of the Cardinals says happy to have Gannon, and they do have a franchise quarterback.
His plan he outlined, some of which he'll get in today, some of which we're not going to get into, but I'm excited about it. It's the view that he had of our elite quarterback and getting him back to being the playmaker that he is and making sure we build around him and put our players in positions, especially Kyler as our quarterback, to really get after it. And I was excited about what his plan is and how he outlined it.
See, Kyler is omnipresent. See, what they did by letting Kyler win that battle, Michael Lombardi, and you know this, you talked about it extensively, is now Kyler is omnipresent. Everything the organization talks about, everything the organization does, he always has to be included because he's the elephant in the room. It's an issue.
Yeah. I mean, I had this happen to me in Cleveland when Art Modell said there's nobody more important to the Cleveland Browns than Bernie Kosar. And when the owner makes that statement, what does everybody else feel like? And especially when, you know, it's one thing for Robert Kraft to say that about Tom Brady or the Glazers family to say that, or Andy Reid and Clark Hunt say that about Patrick Mahomes, but you're saying this about a guy that's really not well-liked. I mean, you know, he's not exactly, warm and fuzzy. I mean, so they're just doubling down on it. And oftentimes that happens. I mean, this is the false reality. You don't want to admit you made a mistake. They see an elite player. I see a guy that if you pressure him in the pocket, keep him in, make him play quarterback, he plays small. We'll see who's right.
The irony that Cliff Kingsbury is thought of as an offensive mastermind, a quarterback guru, they said in the clip there, and Bidwell said in the clip, that we're bringing in a defensive guy to fix the quarterback position, which is, or maybe he's got a plan as far as who his assistants are going to be to fix it, but they're letting go of Kingsbury to bring in a defensive-minded guy to fix Kyler Murray. Everything's backwards in Arizona right now.
Well, I mean, look, they got it, you know, and then they had a good defensive coordinator. I mean, Vance Joseph is in demand now. They let him out of his contract. I would assume he's probably going to come to Philadelphia as an opportunity, whether he goes to Denver, goes back to Denver. I haven't been the head coach. That's a little awkward, even though it's new ownership in the building. But, you know, I mean, I didn't think that they played poorly in Arizona. I didn't think their talent level was great. Defensively, I'm talking about.
No, totally. So the rumor is Vance Joseph to the Eagles? That's interesting.
I think that's I would suspect that to be the case. Yeah, I think You know, I'm sure they're going to have to work through the process. It was easy to transition from their quarterback coach to the offensive coordinator because, you know, he was a minority, Brian Johnson, and then they could just move him up without having to follow the Rooney Rule. You don't have to go through the Rooney Rule if you do that.
I think the most important thing here for Gannon will be his offensive side of the football, his hires. Do we know anything about who Gannon has lined up for his assistants to help Murray there?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of conversation about an offensive assistant in Cleveland if they let him out. Drew Drisnik, I believe his name is, and he is the number one guy on his list to get in there as an offensive
coach. The whale
capper? So,
isn't that the whale capper's name? They're going to hire the whale capper?
No, I don't. I said, I got to hold on, Patrick. Hold on here. I got it here.
It's okay.
I had the
it's
wrong.
Okay.
Maybe
Gil will be the wide receivers coach.
Could be.
I'm listening.
Could be the case.
I'm listening.
All right. Hold on. I got it right here for you.
Drew Terrell is what Elliot said.
Drew Terrell. I had the wrong name on. Yeah, Drew. Thank you, Elliot. How'd you get that so fast? So good. Anyway,
Google.
Yeah, Google. So I think that's kind of where he's leaning. No, I'm sorry. It's not. Drew Petsick is his name. Drew Petsick. He's the quarterback coach.
You know what? It was a mixture of all the names. We knew we were going to get there eventually. So that's the hot name.
The name, yeah. That's the hot name. He's the quarterback coach. Now, Cleveland's got to let him go to get out there to see if he'll do it, but that's the name.
We got there. And he is going to be tasked with working with Kyler Murray. So we wish him the best of luck. I'm sure you saw the video.
If they let him out and all that. I mean, there's a lot to go through in all this.
I'm sure. The video of Gannon when he was kind of walking through the facility and Kyler Murray happened to be working out. And Gannon, they said, oh, he's in the weight room. So Gannon, like, hurriedly went over to the weight room. They did an awkward hug thing where, obviously, they had never met once in their life. And they both said, let's go win some effing games. And it was just like, oh, Gannon, Jonathan, you have no clue what you're getting yourself into. That's apparent. Coming back, Lamar Jackson and the Ravens.
You're listening to The Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
Okay, now that the football season is done, if you're looking for a betting edge on the NHL, NBA, or college basketball, VSiN experts have you covered. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber with an introductory offer of only $9.99 right now. VSiN Pro subscribers get access to our daily recap of the top plays made by VSiN show hosts and guests. You get tools like our betting splits, deep dive betting reports, which are very comprehensive, VSiN betting guides for our biggest games of the season, where our experts break down brackets, best bets, and daily props. Again, everything's there, and it's for $9.99 right now. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. Michael Lombardi there. I'm Patrick Maher. Hope you're having a nice Friday as we head into, I guess, officially the first weekend with no football. Now, we had the little respite in between, but when you've got the Super Bowl on the horizon, you still feel like there's something there. So this will be our proper first weekend without football, which is a little melancholy, Michael Lombardi. I hope maybe we can do a little bit of an impromptu step into my office. And I'm going to bring up Eric Bieniemy. So you put on your GM and front office hat, and maybe you were to counsel Eric Bieniemy. So obviously he needs to get out from Andy Reid's shadow. We get that. He's going to leave Kelsey. He's going to leave Mahomes. He's going to leave a team that's won 2 Super Bowl in 4 years. Why would he go to Washington? No, I'm going to let you run with this. He has Sam Howell, who has 1 start. He has an offensive line, which is a disaster. And he has a lame duck head coach in Ron Rivera. It just seems like an odd place to go when you're going to be calling plays officially out of Reed's shadow.
Well, he needs to get out of it. It's a huge – he's Punxsutawney Phil. He's in that shadow the whole time, you know, with Andy. And so if you want to make your mark – look, you've been in front of – Eric, you've been in front of 12 owners, right? You've had your opportunity. Something's missing in the interview. I think you need to figure it out. And I think obviously I would spend time trying to help you in the interview process, how to handle it. But more than that, I think you have, when you have an opportunity to create your own palette, to paint your own picture, you got to take advantage of it. You know, one of the things, this same situation happened. Steve Spagnuolo was at the Eagles when the Eagles were very successful. And he was a linebacker coach, and he went up to the Giants. And everybody thought the Giants were going to get fired. He went up there, and they went to the Super Bowl that year. You know, it was Coughlin's year. They went to the Super Bowl in the Super Bowl. That's how he got the Ram job. So, you know, what looks like a dead-end job could be a great job if you know what you're doing and you can manage it. I mean, when Brian Daboll took the Giants job, nobody thought that was going to be a good job. So I think there's no doubt that, you know, you got to take this opportunity to go forward. And if you don't, you know, you're constantly going to be in the same spot. You're going to get interviewed. You're going to have a lot of media behind you. But there's something happening in these interviews that the media doesn't know, or there's something we all don't know that's happening.
Yeah, I mean, I think it'd be shocking at this point. There's, again, because of the narrative, now Rivera, there's pressure on Rivera to hire Bieniemy, right? Now that he's sitting down and talking to him.
Look, I think to me, you know, before you talk to Bieniemy, you had to know you were going to hire him. Because you're not sending Bieniemy away. I mean, one thing to send Bieniemy away and get a head coach, not for a head coaching job. It's another thing to bring him in and then not hire him as the OC. Now you're going to handle, and I'm not saying that Rivera's right, or I'm just saying, to me, if you go down that road, you better go all the way down the road. You better have done your homework to where, unless Bieniemy comes in and just doesn't, you know, just completely blows the interview, you're going to have, you're hiring him, because you've created the media sensation here. I don't think he's going back to Kansas City. I don't think he's going to listen to Washington and come back to Kansas City. I don't think that's an option. I think he's gone from Kansas City.
Let me ask you this, Michael. What was the benefit of Ron Rivera walking around Radio Row right next to us and telling everybody that Sam Howell was going to be the starter unless beaten out in camp? Like, why would you trade away or give away any type of leverage you have going into the draft, into this offseason, where you could make a move at quarterback?
Well, first of all, I didn't understand what he was doing on Radio Row. You know, when I saw Sean Payton at the Radio Row, I'm like, God, Sean's pretty busy. He's got a bunch of things he needs to do. And then I realized he has a contract with Fox that he wanted to probably fulfill all the way through the end. I got that, right? I get that, you know, and it's kind of a moratorium. But why Ron was there, when you've got free agency, the college draft, like, you really want to spend a day flying to Arizona, a day flying back to Washington? You don't have other things to do? I mean, I sent a head coach a text asking him if he was there, and he was like, what, are you kidding me? You know, I got free agency. I got offensive personnel. I got all this stuff to do. You know, and I don't get that at all. Like, but one of the things, I was saying this to somebody today on the phone this morning, I mean, you know, Rivera hasn't had a winning season in 5 years, and there's never anybody says that, you know, he's not doing a great job. I mean, that's why he's there. He's very good at schmoozing the room.
He is. That's why he was politicking. He was the reason he was there, you just nailed it. He was politicking, keeping his face in front of everybody, keeping his media presence stable. And by the way, right before he got to Phoenix, you know where he was? He was playing in the Pro-Am up at Pebble. So this offseason, without an offensive coordinator and a team that didn't make the postseason, he's playing golf and headed to Media Row. It's just an odd look for Rivera.
I mean, it's not an odd look. It's a horrendous look for me. I mean, if Al Davis were alive and he was, that would never have happened. I mean, I don't know how that happens. I mean, to me, the offseason, when you've had the year that they've had, what can you, there's nothing left. I mean, you're working harder than you've ever worked before. You're watching more tape. I mean, you got reports to write. You got all these things to do. Like, I don't understand it. But, you know, I mean, he thinks he's got it under control, so God bless him.
And to your point about Al Davis, whatever you think of Al Davis, there was some sturdy ownership. You knew who the owner was of the Raiders. Right now, Ron Rivera, it's a bit of a YOLO situation. Go play golf, go to Media Row, because nobody's going to keep him accountable because of the Snyder mess. So he can do whatever he wants. He's got autonomy.
But Patrick, you got to be accountable yourself. Like, there's no way I would. I mean, I would never. Like, if I were Ron Rivera, I don't think I would be sleeping in my office. I would never leave. I mean, I'm going to work harder than I've ever worked. This is do or die. But let's not forget now. We criticize players for getting a big contract and kind of coasting. But sometimes it happens in coaching, too. Sometimes it happens in coaching. And in my book, I talk about my second stint is killing my first stint. You know, where a guy goes and takes another job after he's had a successful career, and then the second stint isn't very good. And I think some of that is there's not enough urgency. There's not that I got to show people I know what I'm doing. There's more of a I got it. I got it. I got it. I mean, you know, like Scott Turner was the only thing wrong with that program? You mean every other coach on the staff was brilliant?
No. Look, great guy, good with people, beat cancer, mediocre football coach. Those are facts.
I mean,
like, just look up the numbers.
Well, I think what you said right there, great guy, is exactly that's where everything starts. It's when you're easy to get along with, then you're going to get things done. You know, you become more pliable. You become more attractive.
Yep, pliability is a good way of putting it. Now, maybe not the easiest guy to get along with. However, you just mentioned first and second stint. Fascinating what's going on with Brian Flores, who is going to be aggressive there in Minnesota. He said, I'm aggressive by nature. He looks to turn Minnesota's defense around. But I love his plan here. He's going to get another shot, Michael. He could have taken the Cardinals job. Why would you jump at an opportunity just because it's available? You got to have the right fit in life. And I love what Flores did here.
I did too. And look, if his case would be stronger against the NFL if he didn't admit he got offered that job. Right?
Interesting.
By him admitting that he got offered that job, that doesn't really make his case, you know? So he's just being brutally honest, and he's not being political here. And I think he's smart. He's a young coach. He's going to go to a really good situation. He's got a team that was a playoff team that, if he improves defensively, can take a giant step forward. You know, look, how many games did they win? You know, he's got a nucleus there. He'll do a wonderful job there. I think he helped Pittsburgh out tremendously. I really do.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's almost like, was he playing the PR game or not? Because if by saying you got offered a head coaching job in this cycle, next cycle, maybe people would view you with a little bit more anticipation. What's fascinating is he's going to coach under a coach that maybe doesn't have the resume, or certainly didn't have the resume when he got the Minnesota job, in O'Connell, right? Because everybody came off that McVay tree and got jobs, including LaFleur, who ran a terrible offense in Tennessee before he got one of the great jobs in the history of sport, the Green Bay Packer head coach.
Yeah, so, I mean, look, he's in perfect situation here. I mean, you know, he's going to go in there and he can run his team, and he can wait. Like, saying no isn't the worst thing to do.
Sometimes it's very valuable, 100%. Yeah, the Rivera stuff, I was interested to talk to you about that because it fascinated me. It's like, you're the only head coach up at Pebble at the Pro-Am. Yes, I know you have a house there, but you've got a team to run. And then you take a flight from California to Phoenix to walk around and talk to Pro Football Talk. Like, this doesn't make any sense. This isn't adding up. You've got a team that finished 8-8 last year with a rookie quarterback and no offensive coordinator. Anyway, do you, Ron Rivera? Now, you mentioned Sean Payton. Does he have a defensive coordinator? There's an interesting name in the mix. We'll come back and discuss it. Plus, I mentioned Lamar Jackson. Is he involved in the OC decision there for the Baltimore Ravens? We'll get to that next here on the Lombardi Line.
You're listening to the Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
Okay, betting splits, Pro Tools, VSiN Pros, it's all there. VSiN.com/subscribe. Go to VSiN.com. You can check out our betting splits, latest betting splits on every game. Find out which games are seeing the most tickets written, odds, data, analysis for every game. And there's a lot of conversation about betting splits, how to use them, if they're effective. They certainly are. You're going to curtail them to your handicapping style, so make sure you check them out. They're updated every 10 minutes from DraftKings at VSiN.com/subscribe to sign up right now for $9.99. I would say that's probably, with the space getting completely overly inundated, as we welcome you back, Michael Lombardi. I'm Patrick Maher. This is the Lombardi Line. It's VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. We talked about it a little bit with Mike Palm yesterday during the break, where the space is just completely overly inundated. When you have an over inundation, you have over information, Michael Lombardi, and sometimes it gets saturated. And so, especially with social media, that proliferation, where all of a sudden things start to get mixed. I know that's why it frustrates you, somebody that actually sat in a front office. You watch people try to run teams through Twitter. But for example, betting splits are constantly debated. They know. Of course they know. And I would say is, be autonomous with the information. Like, if you use the betting splits to your advantage. Don't worry about what other people are telling you about betting splits. You can use the betting splits as a part of your pro tool and arsenal to become a better handicapper. That's all. That's all I wanted to say. Anything? Any follow-up on that, my man?
No, I think betting splits are really important, and I think you have to understand it, especially, you know, now that we're in the basketball, the KenPom season and the NBA, there's not a lot of future liability on some of those on those betting splits. So they actually mean more than they have in the past. Whereas in the Super Bowl, you know, the betting splits were tilted. The lines were tilted to help, like Mike Palm talked about yesterday, to get more money on the other side. They had liability on Philadelphia. So, you know, you got to play all that in. It isn't just sharp money or somebody who's in their basement in Des Moines figuring things out.
Yep. 100%. So make sure you check out the betting splits. So let's discuss this one has been rumored for a few days now, but it looks like Sean Payton and the Broncos could be getting freaky. Yeah, Rex Ryan. So Rex Ryan, who's been a studio analyst for ESPN since 2017, wants to get back in the game, and maybe he'll join Sean Payton there as a DC.
I think he only wants to get back in the game if the salary's right. It's all about money. And so if Sean's, you know, the going rate for some of these coordinators now has really gone up. And it's above $3 million a year. Vic Fangio and Dan Quinn, they're all in the fours per year. I mean, this is what Jerry Jones is complaining about. He's saying the coaches' salaries are going up. Well, Jerry, so are the revenues going up. And let me say this. Todd Monken took the offensive coordinator job at Baltimore. He's going to make over $3 million a year. Georgia would have matched it. He just made a decision to go to Baltimore because he wanted to work in the NFL. Georgia was fully prepared to match the salary. So when Jerry's talking like that, like the landscape of coaching has dramatically changed where these salaries have gone up. And Rex is sitting there on that set saying, you know, maybe it's time for me to get back in. These salaries are almost head coaching like when I was a head coach. So if Sean's going to pay him that, you know, then I think he'll get back in. Now this will be a transition because, you know, you just don't take 5 years and come right back in and think, oh, I got it.
Is there, I don't know if you know, if there's a relationship with Ryan and Payton. I'm sure there is, you know, like we always talk about, it's a smaller network than people would imagine.
Well,
and do you think there is
Rob
interest
Ryan,
from Payton's side?
Rob Ryan, Rex's brother, was Sean's defensive coordinator in New Orleans for many years, and he fired him, you know, and so that obviously that happens. Rob's now at the Raiders, but so, I mean, I don't know what that would mean, but, you know, Sean hasn't hired any defensive coaches, so it would give Rex a chance to hire some of the guys he wants to be with them. Mike Pettine being one of them. Mike Pettine's out of football right now, so it'll be interesting how this all plays out. That's the thing about Bieniemy. In our conversation in the last block, we didn't talk about, but Bieniemy, he's going to take, if he takes his, all the Washington staff is intact. I mean, Ken Zampese, John Matsko, Juan Castillo, all those guys are there. Now, they're all West Coast offense guys, so it won't be that hard for Bieniemy, but he'll have none of his coaches. And if I were Bieniemy, I'd say, hey, I got to have somebody with me that I know that will help me.
I'm glad you brought that up. That's my point about Bieniemy. I can't imagine a worse landing spot. I totally understand your point about finally getting out, taking an opportunity, showing what your value is, but you don't know what you have with Howell. You definitely don't know what you have at head coach, and you're going to inherit Zampese and the rest of the coaching staff to assist you. I just don't, again, I think
very challenging.
He's eager to get
very
away
challenging.
From Kansas City. It's very challenging, though.
You know, but, you know, sometimes people see that as an opportunity, and he's got to look at it that way. And I'm sure that, and they're going to pay him well. They're going to pay him well.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why what Brian Flores did, you know, he turned down that job. I mean, they're paying these coaches now, first-time head coaches, they're paying huge money. I mean, lifetime money. I mean, Shane Steichen will never have to work again based on what he got at Indianapolis. I mean, so this is – we're talking about long-term wealth here.
No conflict there in Denver with Rex Ryan and Sean Payton as far as Sean Payton. He's not looking over his shoulder, obviously. I mean, Rex Ryan has a reputation. But Sean Payton's the guy there. He wouldn't be concerned about any type of personality clash.
Look, if Rex gets the right offer based on the market value of the guys – that have been defensive coordinators in the league, the Vic Fangios, because Rex can make the argument, I'm as good as Fangio, I'm as good as Quinn, I'm as good as Martindale. I'm as good as any of these guys. What's Vance Joseph get, right? What's he going to get? You know, that contract in Philadelphia, what's that? What's the market value? The market on coordinators have now been reset. And so, you know, if he gets that market value, he's going to get it. I mean, I don't know what Ebro got in Carolina, but I'm sure he got paid a lot of money. I'm sure Steve Wilks got paid really well in San Francisco. That's the going rate.
It should be interesting. We'll see what happens with the defensive coordinator position there. Sean Payton and Rex Ryan, that's the rumor.
You know, now, the other thing I think that's important to note, we're throwing these numbers around for fans. That's a lot of money, right? But when you think of it, when the cap's at $220 million, right, and you're in charge of one half of the unit that is responsible for that cap, so let's say you're in charge of a $100 million part of the team, you should get paid that kind of number.
Listen, 115 million people watched the Super Bowl. Maybe you're going to get 7 to 8 million watching NBA championship. I don't think there's no context for the NFL and the beast that it is. If you tell me that offensive coordinators make 10 million, I'd say fine. That seems right.
Yeah, I mean, look, it is. As the television revenue goes up, longevity of the careers of the coaches go down, but the salaries go way up.
And they should. That's the market. We live in a capitalistic society, my man. How about Lamar Jackson and the rumors? Ravens, they didn't, quote, fully integrate Lamar Jackson in the hiring process of the new OC. We're going to talk to Jordan Schultz in the next hour, but he says the candidates who interviewed with the Ravens were not given full assurances that Lamar Jackson will be the quarterback next season. What are you hearing about what's taking place in Baltimore?
I was told that and I don't know, this is kind of just hearsay through the coaching grounds, but I heard that John and Lamar had a meeting. John actually showed Lamar the candidates he was talking to. Lamar looked at the list and spent about a second and said, I'm good with whatever you got. And that was the end of the meeting. And I think there's a lot of mixed signals going on here in terms of, I think you have to understand the organization before you get into any. Harbaugh's going to say what he has to say. But the organization is a organization that's built on what's the return on the investment. And if somebody is willing to go in there and pay what Russell Wilson got or with all these other deals, I think Baltimore will listen. I'm not saying they're going to make a trade, but I think Baltimore will listen. And I think that's what they should do, is listen. Because there's nobody who's not, the value isn't, that if somebody's willing to overpay for something, they can have it. I mean, all these guys that have made billions of dollars that own NFL teams, they've made their lives buying companies and selling them because they've made because of the value has gone way up. It's the same thing. If somebody's willing to come in and give a huge deal to Lamar, I would have no doubt that Baltimore would contemplate it for a while and then figure out their next move. John's not going to say that because John, you know, where are we going to play quarterback? That's why, you know, to me, hiring Monken, I mean, never really didn't make sense. I mean, I didn't understand that. I don't know why Todd left Georgia. That's a hell of a job to get onto this kind of roadmap here, but he did. And, you know, it's going to have to be conducive to it. I don't know if that's all perfectly aligned.
Could you even take a guess, a stab at what the market would return for Lamar Jackson?
Well, I mean, look, it would have to be the floor would be Russell Wilson, Deshaun Watson. There it is. There's the market. I mean, there it is.
25-year-old MVP. Yeah,
I think it's been established. It's what it is. You might have to kick some. I mean, you move some pieces around, but the structure of the deal's in place.
How about another quarterback potentially on the move? Justin Fields? That's a question that we're going to have to take a look at. Plus, the writing spotlight with Mike.
You're listening to The Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
Okay, BetMGM, of course, the king of sportsbooks. Oh, you can refer a friend. This is great. You get $50, they get $50. So here's what you're going to do. You're going to go to BetMGM.com. You're going to look for the refer a friend link. You click it. You send a friend a message. It's so simple. Once they sign up, they get $50. You get $50. Everybody's happy. So check out BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks, refer a friend program right now. Remember, you got to be 21 years or older. If you have a problem, it's 1-800-BETMGM. gambler, go refer a friend over at BetMGM. BetMGM is the sponsor of the Lombardi Line as we welcome you back here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. I'm Patrick Maher. Of course, he is Michael Lombardi. We were just talking about some of the news and notes from the NFL. Lamar Jackson, interesting what you said, Michael, but obviously everybody is expendable.
I think Jordan Schultz will have more on this too. I think it was interesting that they didn't hire somebody that you would say, wow, they're going to run Philly's six-back offense, or they went college, which, you know, that gives you an idea, well, maybe they're going to do some read option stuff. But I think to me, I'm not sure this is just an instinct, but just knowing the way the Baltimore thinks that, you know, Sashi Brown is involved with this team too, who was in Cleveland. So he's an analytical-based guy. You know, he's the guy that traded the pick to Houston for Deshaun Watson. So maybe they got, you know, some way to find a quarterback. I don't know. But I would not say Lamar's definitely gone. I just think it's going to be a conversation.
Okay. We're going to have Jordan Schultz on coming up in about 45 minutes. And he talked about the Ravens situation, and candidates who interviewed with the Ravens were not given full assurances that Lamar Jackson will be the quarterback next season. Munkin, of course, a longtime assistant in the NFL, goes, wins two championships there, running the offense for Kirby Smart down in Georgia. Was that just a matter of wanting to get back in the league?
Yeah. I think that's what it is. I mean, because, you know, like I said earlier, there's no doubt he was, you know, Georgia would have matched the salary. I mean, that's the thing about college football. College football isn't you're taking a pay cut there. College football's a harder job with the NIL. All those things are harder. However, that being said, it's not a harder job. The pay is going to be just really as good. So I think there's no doubt that it was just by personal choice.
Yeah, especially at Georgia. Down in Athens, the boosters will pick up the bill. It's not an issue. So they could have paid Todd Monken. There's no doubt about that. So let's move on to this one. We talked just about one quarterback, young quarterback, in Lamar Jackson. Let's talk about Justin Fields. So, of course, the Bears sitting there with the number one overall pick. There are trade rumors flying like crazy. Multiple GMs are, quote-unquote, fairly convinced, Michael, the Bears will deal the quarterback. According to Jason Lock on Fora, multiple NFL general managers came out of the Senior Bowl fairly convinced Fields will be traded. Would you ship Fields and replace him with a quarterback from this year's draft?
You know, I think I certainly would. You know, to me, watching the game tape, I would say yes. I didn't have a chance to. I don't watch their practices. But to me, I have two concerns. Can he ever become Jalen Hurts in terms of that offense? And can he stay healthy running that offense? Right? I mean, he has not been durable in his career, and he takes hits. He's going to take hits. He's going to have to run that offense. Now, what could you get for Fields? I think that's a great question. I don't know the answer to that. You know, I don't like his release. I don't like his ability to stay consistent with accuracy. And at the end of the day, you have to throw the ball to win in the NFL. And I think Hurts proved that he's gotten better at throwing the football. Because I think at the end of that game, they were throwing the ball. They made throws. Hurts made throws. So, you know, I would certainly say to myself, I would not rule it out if I were the GM. I wouldn't say for certain I would, but I have a lot of doubts about Fields. And if I go down the Fields road, if I'm going down that road, I don't know where I end up. Do I end up with a Super Bowl team, or do I end up fired? You know, if I go down this Hurt Fields road that Ryan Pace drove the car on, am I going to lose my job because I can't get him to play quarterback? The last thing I want to do is 3 years from now draft another quarterback.
What we do know is the Bears have more cap space than anybody. Maybe I think this close to double the next team in line as far as cap space.
I mean,
so they have plenty of money.
I mean, that just means they're going to overspend, but you have to be careful. I mean, you can't be like the kid at the candy store or me down at Ward's Bakery, just eat every donut. You got to be careful about it, right? You got to be able to think this through and you want to build something that's cohesive to the quarterback, right? So that's the biggest issue. It's like, who are we? Like, who are we? What are we going to be on offense? Well, we want to be – Jonathan Gannon said we want to be multiple. Okay, I get that. That's great to say. We want to be more – what's our core? Who are we? Are we a size, speed team? I don't care whether we're 34, 43. That's insignificant. But who are we, and what are the positions that we need most to get that fixed? That's what you have to have answered. That's what a lot of teams don't ask themselves when they walk into the job. See, Shane Steichen comes in Indianapolis. He's got Gus Bradley over there. He's got Bubba Ventrone. He's just trying to figure out what he's doing on offense. Does that mean this is going to work? It could for a year, but that doesn't mean you have full understanding of who you are.
The value of Fields is a fascinating question. So 2 years ago, of course, drafted 11th overall in the 21 draft, played, what, 15, started 15 games last year, started 10 games in 21. His rookie season, his completion percentage went up from 58.9 to 60.4. So you look at a couple of the numbers. I know you're not overly impressed by him. I'd be fascinating to see what teams are telling the Bears they'd be willing to give up for Fields.
Well, see, I think to me the Bears haven't made that phone call. I don't think the Bears have made that call. I don't think the Bears have said, hey, we're going to trade Fields, because that would get all over. I think the Bears are evaluating the quarterbacks in the draft, which they should do, comparing those quarterbacks to Fields. And then once they feel like, okay, I think C.J. Stroud is way better than Fields, I'm making this up, then I'm going to trade Fields. Because remember, they have the first pick in the draft. So they don't have to con anybody. They don't have to play possum here. They could just say, okay, once we make the decision, here's where we are. Then we're going to go trade him. If we trade Fields, so now, what are we going to get for Fields? What's that value out there? Who liked Fields coming out in the draft? Who wants to go with Fields? All those are fair questions to ask, you know? And look, when Fields leaves and goes somewhere else, I mean, are you prepared to look, he's a dynamically talented athlete, but he's going to, you prepared to have an offense that doesn't throw the football? Are you prepared to go there? Remains to be seen.
I think exactly what you said at the onset. Teams are asking themselves right now that need a quarterback, could this be the next Jalen Hurts? There were questions, some of the similar questions that now teams have about Justin Fields and fans have about Fields. Could Fields turn into a Hurts? That's the question.
Right, and so my question back to you would be, if the answer is yes, why don't the Bears keep him?
No, I think the Bears are sitting there with all this cap space, number one overall pick, looking around like, this is our opportunity. We could get creative. Maybe we like the guy. Maybe we don't. But there's just so many things that they could do.
What are we going to get? What do you think somebody would be willing to pay a one for Fields? I mean, nobody, a top 10 one, no. A middle one, perhaps. I mean, this is in the NBA. You can't trade 5 twos for a guy, you know. You can't do that, right? Those picks are invaluable.
So, for example, we talked about the Colts yesterday, who have the 4th overall pick. I don't think the Colts are willing just to give up 4 overall for Justin Fields. That's pretty obvious.
That would be insane to do. Why?
Yeah. So, but I'm saying then you start going back down to teams that need quarterbacks, and you start asking yourself, would they be willing to give up that pick? Because the Bears are going to be looking for a first rounder, regardless of whether or not they're going to get it. That's what they're going
to ask. But once you take Fields, though, Patrick, once you take Fields, you're committing to the 6-back offense. Are you ready to do that? Are you ready to do that? Nobody's taking Fields thinking we're going to run the West Coast.
Your point is well taken. Your point is well taken that there's a philosophy. The team has to have a certain philosophy. So that
you got to go all.
Many.
You're either going all in or you're not. And you know, I mean, would somebody take Fields for a mid round pick? Sure, why not? I got nothing invested in him. I'll give it a shot. But if I got to give up a lot to get him, then that means I got to go all in on this.
I'm going to ask you bluntly. Can Fields turn into the passer that Hurts has turned into?
I would say no, but I didn't think Hurts could become as good a passer. But I will say this about Hurts. They don't ask him to make any anticipatory throws. It's all high, low, half field reads, which he has been able to do behind a very good line. And I just think to me, with his release, Fields' release is problematic. The ball's too inconsistent coming out. And then look, durability. I mean, he's not the same guy that Hurts is in terms of his lower body power.
Good one. I wonder if Steichen, who's sitting there with Indy, is looking at somebody like a Fields. Again, not giving up the 4th pick. I'm not saying that. But looking at Fields and saying, I did it with Hurts. I could do it here in Indy with Fields.
I think he's got to say to himself, Fields is going to be the most unbelievable worker of all time. That's what Hurts is.
Something you can't measure. I think what we learned throughout this season is Hurts' character is just beyond something that you really can't measure. There's no way to measure that type of personality and those attributes. When we come back, a guy of high character, Vinny Maliulo, joins us from behind the book there at the South Point.